This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It's almost as scary as watching your dog growl at the wall and realize he sees something you don't. Get a quote at geico.com.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Coney Barrett on track. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Thursday, October 15. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump's latest choice for the Supreme Court has completed her question and answer session with senators. The Judiciary Committee will vote on Amy Coney Barrett next week.
Facebook and Twitter have put limits on the sharing of a New York Post story about Hunter Biden, but Twitter's CEO is questioning the move.
President Trump and challenger Joe Biden take questions from voters tonight in separate town halls.
And how long the coronavirus can cling to various surfaces that we touch frequently.
Coronavirus can live on paper money. It can also live on your phone screens, glass, and a bunch of other common surfaces for up to about 28 days. It can really cling to those things for a long time. And when you look at that compared to the flu only generally stays on these kinds of surfaces for 17 days.
Katie Hill at Millie on the durability of the coronavirus. Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett is now out of the hot seat. The Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday ended a second day of questions with Democrats on the panel, pressing the judge on a range of issues, including her past writings and different hypotheticals. Judge Barrett was asked if she agrees with her late mentor, Justice Antonin Scalia, opposing the Voting Rights Act of 1965.
When I said Justice Scalia's philosophy is mine, too, what I meant is that his jurisprudential approach to text, as we've talked about originalism and textualism, is the same that I would take. And I think as for the Voting Rights Act, I think that it was obviously a triumph in the civil rights movement.
The hearings are expected to conclude today, and the committee is expected to vote on her nomination a week from today, with a full Senate vote on October 26th, just days before the November 3rd presidential election. Republican control of the Senate all but ensures Judge Barrett's confirmation as President Trump's choice to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Speaking of the Supreme Court, how did we get to this point where the nomination of a justice can eclipse all other national governing priorities? And both parties approach these moments as partisan power plays rather than what's in the best interests of the country. Robert Tsai, law professor at American University, wrote an opinion piece in Politico. Robert, how do you see it?
If we ask ourselves what gets people very irate, you're absolutely right. It's these moments like the Obama seat that was identified for Merrick Garland, and certainly for conservatives, they go back to Robert Bork. But if we ask ourselves, you know, what are the larger, you know, patterns of historical behavior that have really brought us to this point where fights over Supreme Court nominations have become sort of all-out war? It goes much further, right? And I really talk about two things. The first is that the way that particular parties, like the Democrats or the Republicans, have looked to the courts as a way to sort of codify their policy preferences is the bigger and longer and more troubling pattern. And then the other thing that I talk about in the piece is that the parties themselves have changed. And so, you know, one party right now, the GOP, has become more of a minority party, has had a harder time appealing to a broader swath of America. And that means that they have looked to the courts in particular to hang on to power, even when they can't win a majority of the vote.
What's an example of that? Because I know you said both sides have used the court for enhancing their political fortunes.
Absolutely. I mean, if you want to talk about the broader practice, the first thing, the broader practice of what we might call partisan entrenchment, you know, that goes way back. I mean, we can go back to our founding and see that it was first governed by the Federalist Party. And, you know, the moment the Federalist Party first lost an election in 1800, to someone from a different party, that was Thomas Jefferson, there was a quick effort to place John Marshall, a Federalist stalwart, on the Supreme Court, And that was a kind of a great move to entrench the Federalist Party's, you know, policy preferences. But the big thing that has mattered over the years, particularly in our more recent history, is the current version of the Republican Party, the current version of the Democratic Party, have looked to the courts to, you know, create or establish new rights, right? For people on the left, it all sort of started with Brown versus Board, striking down segregation, expanding, free speech, the right to protest. On the right, what has happened is that the GOP and their allies have, changed their tactics. At one time, they were just sort of resisting those moves, and then they sort of kind of jumped on the train, so to speak, and they decided to start to turn to the courts and demand the expansion of their own rights. So establishment of, gun rights in the Supreme Court for the first time, expansion of corporate speech rights, corporate rights to sort of expend money in our campaign electoral system. So that's that first longer trend that has made kind of both parties deeply invested in the outcome of the courts.
We're speaking with Robert Tsai, professor of law at American University, also author of a book called Practical Equality, Forging Justice in a Divided Nation. I think we can agree that nobody likes the grandstanding that takes place on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Nobody likes the nasty politics involved here. So how about solutions? I mean, is term limits a thing or an option in your mind?
Yeah, so this is a good question. There is, the question of how the Constitution was originally designed, and most people agree that it did create life tenure, but they didn't, I think, account for, partisan dysfunction in the way that we see pretty much every branch operate now.
Yeah.
And they didn't really, I think through the consequences of what it might look like if one party was able to sort of dominate all the levers of government. If they had, I think that they probably would have. And we certainly should think about having term limits, particularly for the Supreme Court. So the United States we're on the outlier right now among countries of the world not having term limits. Most countries understand that it can be a truly anti-democratic problem to have people on the court for more than a generation being able to sort of write in their values or kind of prevent major reforms from happening.
Thanks, Robert. Robert Tsai, law professor at American University. By the way, a Wall Street Journal editorial says Democrats are doing a great disservice to the law and judiciary by treating these hearings like an emotive political ad. The Journal says keep doing that and soon the Supreme Court will be as unpopular as Congress, which may be their real goal as they prepare the ground to pack the court next year. President Trump and challenger Joe Biden continue blazing the campaign trail. In a state that's become an unexpected battleground, President Trump appeared at a rally in Iowa last night, declaring nobody's going to do for Iowa what I did for Iowa. He challenged whether Mr. Biden could match other world leaders.
One thing I've learned, President Xi of China, he's 100%. Putin of Russia, 100%. Kim Jong-un, by the way, whatever happened to that war we were supposed to be in? Kim Jong-un of North Korea, 100%. These people are sharp and they're smart.
He spoke for about 90 minutes at an airport hangar in Des Moines. Meanwhile, Mr. Biden delivered recorded remarks as part of a program called Muslims Making Change.
We've seen what happens when a president fans the flames, hate crimes on the march, more kids bullied in school, the rise of anti-Muslim bigotry. This is not who we are.
Each man appears in a town hall event this evening, by the way, in which they take questions from voters. Tonight was initially set to be their second debate. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, visit planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Thanks for being with us. A New York Post story alleging details of Hunter Biden's business dealings with a Ukrainian energy company has been flagged by Facebook and Twitter, which limited the sharing of articles. The story also claims that presidential nominee Joe Biden had met with an advisor of Burisma Holdings. President Trump sounded off on the campaign trail.
They were never taken down by Twitter or Facebook or the mainstream media, never once. Yet with Biden today, they take negative posts down almost before they even go up. They're trying to protect him.
Separately, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey said yesterday that it was unacceptable for Twitter to block users from linking to the article without context explanation for the decision. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The Senate Judiciary Committee is poised to take the first steps toward approving Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett following two long days of Senate testimony in which she stressed that she would be her own judge and sought to create distance between herself and past positions.
There's room for different approaches to the Constitution, and I think those approaches shouldn't be broken down into partisan boxes because judges are not partisan.
Number two.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin continue to haggle over policies, including testing strategy, in their negotiations over another coronavirus relief package, despite closing some distance over how much money to spend. The two are expected to speak again today.
Number three.
Melania Trump says her son Barron tested positive for the coronavirus but had no symptoms. The First Lady disclosed the teen tested positive soon after his parents did. President Trump addressed the issue on the campaign trail in Iowa yesterday.
Barron tested positive. Within like 2 seconds, it was Barron is just fine now. He's tested negative, right? Because it happens. People have it and it goes, get the kids back to school. We got to get the kids back to school.
Melania Trump says she was hit with a roller coaster of symptoms that she treated naturally with vitamins and healthy food. White House coronavirus advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci says his kids won't be coming home for Thanksgiving this year due to fear of possibly spreading the coronavirus. Fauci spoke with CBS.
When you're talking about relatives that are getting on a plane, being exposed in an airport, being exposed in a plane, then walk in the door and say, Happy Thanksgiving. That you have to be careful about.
The CDC is warning of the risks associated with Thanksgiving celebrations this year, especially if people are traveling to see family they don't live with. Well, like everything else, this one is going virtual. Fisher-Price has created a virtual museum on Instagram to celebrate its toy stories. The toy maker has created an online archive with more than 90 exhibits organized by decade, including the Rolling Snoopy Sniffer from 1938. It also has a gift shop that sells 16 products, including a T-shirt featuring one of the company's earliest products, the Dr. Doodle pool toy, roller skate shoelaces, and a Little People lunchbox.
Oh, Little People. We went through that phase. Man, it was going to be 15 years ago.
Now
this
you can
point.
Get a lunchbox.
Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Chances are you're spending too many hours of your day and fees out of your pocket doing business banking the old-fashioned way. It's 2020. There's got to be a better, more affordable solution. There is. It's Aslo, a free business checking account with invoicing, bill pay, money transfers, no minimum balance, no fees, and no minimum deposit. And now there's the all-new Aslo Pro Bundle with unlimited envelopes to organize your money, discounted instant transfers, and the ability to set up recurring invoices all for just $10 a month. But because you're listening to this podcast, you can try Aslo Pro free for 14 days at aslo.com/deal. Learn more with a free copy of Aslo's Small Business Starter Guide or get started right now with an Aslo Pro free 14-day trial at aslo.com/deal. There's no minimum deposit required. Get started for free at aslo.com/deal. That's AZLO.com. Aslo is owned by BBVA USA, member FDIC. Aslo.com/deal. Thanks for being with us. A new study released by the Australian Center for Disease Preparedness finds that the coronavirus can live on your cash and other services for nearly a month, considerably longer than the flu. More from Katie Hill, executive editor at Millie. Katie, what are we learning?
So, yeah, this new study just coming out this week finds that coronavirus can live on paper money. It can also live on your phone screens, glass, and a bunch of other common surfaces for up to about 28 days. Now, I will say this, that the study looked at it sort of at room temperature, so, you know, this is different when it gets hotter or colder. But again, I mean, a lot of these things are kept at room temperature, so it can really cling to those things for a long time. And when you look at that compared to the flu only generally stays on these kinds of surfaces for 17 days. So coronavirus is more robust than the flu when it comes to sticking to stuff.
Now, to be fair, although this sounds gross, right, and probably compares to toilet germs, as we often see, you don't always get sick from this stuff, right, even despite touching it.
That's what's interesting about this, right? They still don't know that you're going to be able to get sick from, you know, say coronavirus is clinging to your $1 bill and you touch it. There isn't really any definitive proof that you can get sick from it. And some researchers say, no, that's not going to happen. Others say, well, I don't know. This seems like it really could. But they don't yet know whether this could make you sick.
All right. So what do you do in the meantime?
So, I mean, first of all, it's the old advice that we hear over and over again about, because, you know, money in general is also not the cleanest thing, right? Neither are these surfaces. Just wash your hands with soap and water for more than 20 seconds, right? That's number one. And you keep hand sanitizer around. And even after, you know, we get a vaccine for coronavirus, this is still just good practice. Like, you are these surfaces, your phone in particular, are very dirty. You should just be keeping hand sanitizer around. Wash your hands with soap. And in this case, I mean, I know a lot of people are going to think, I really, really don't want coronavirus. If you want to wear gloves when you're handling these common surfaces, I mean, that's not a terrible idea either.
We're speaking with Katie Hill, executive editor at Millie. Her piece is called Coronavirus May Cling to Money for 28 Days. And there are some other surfaces that were included in this study as well. You know, I always think, well, at one point in our lives, regular old cash currency is not going to be a thing, but I'm not sure that makes phones a much better choice either, given their germ attraction.
Very true, right? It's going to be your phone, by the way, when they look at those studies, your phone is a filthy place because your hands are touching it all the time and it goes down on surfaces. You're frequently putting it in different places all the time. And by the way, people bring phones into their bathroom. So it's not like, you know, it's not like it's, oh, well, it's never touched the, you know, dirty bathroom sink in the office. Well, it probably has.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, executive editor at Millie. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. So if you're working from home, are you still dressing for work? While we can all understand not wearing a tie, going to the other extreme, like an old t-shirt, is a little too casual. If you need to upgrade the work-from-home wardrobe, try Cuts Clothing. Technical apparel for the sport of business. GQ called them the only shirt worth wearing. They combine an athletic, tailored-looking fit with their custom-engineered, wrinkle-free, ultra-soft Pika fabric for a new level of fit, fabric, and function. I gotta say, I love wearing my Cut shirts. They're tough, they're durable, yet still flexible, willing to move with me. And now Cuts is finally out with their new polos and hoodies made with their custom Hyperloop French Terry fabric. Try Cuts and save. Cuts is loved by your favorite athletes, entrepreneurs, and even podcast hosts. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. cutsclothing.com/Gordon.
The top national stories with the context to make sense of it all. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Thursday, October 15. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Confirmation hearings conclude today for Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett. Fox News says it has an email of Hunter Biden being asked by Burisma Holdings if he can use his influence in political matters. Banks reporting earnings, Goldman Sachs profit nearly doubled in the third quarter, Wells Fargo earnings down 56%. Alabama football coach Nick Saban tests positive for COVID. Dunkin' rolls out a spicy ghost pepper donut. And the 13-year-old who created a COVID memorial quilt. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Grainger. As you get back to business, Grainger is there to help. With supplies and solutions for every industry, safety recovery guides, 24/7 support, and more. Visit Grainger.com/recovery. There is an enormous gulf between the presidential candidates on tax policy, With trillions of dollars at stake over the next decade, here to break down the proposals from President Trump and challenger Joe Biden is Richard Rubin, tax policy writer at the Wall Street Journal. Rich, what about the president's tax cuts from 2017?
That's a case where the president wants to continue that as much as he can. The pieces of it that are expiring, he wants to make them permanent. Much of that doesn't happen until 2025 anyway. But he sees it as a huge success and wants to continue it as best he can and would try to protect it against a Democratic Congress. Vice President Biden, in contrast, has talked about trying to get rid of big chunks of that tax cut. And the Biden campaign has been a little messy on this because at times he and Kamala Harris have both said things like, we want to repeal those tax cuts. But that's not actually what their plan is. Their plan is to repeal the tax cuts for people making more than $400,000 a year. So there's a big difference because there were a lot of people who did get significant tax cuts and are making below $400,000. And so people who listen to the campaign shorthand and look at the campaign plan get two very different answers.
Yeah. How about when it comes to corporate taxes?
Yeah, so there, the Biden proposal is to raise the corporate tax rate from 21% to 28%, which is not quite back to the 35% that it was under President Obama. And although 28 is actually kind of roughly where the Obama administration wanted to go. And then they also have various proposals to impose penalties on U.S. companies that do offshoring, to raise taxes on U.S. companies' foreign income, to have a sort of minimum tax on companies that aren't paying enough by their measures. So there's a bunch of corporate tax proposals that are in the Biden plan that they would go after.
All right. So both candidates obviously want to keep the U.S. competitive on the global stage. Each argues that this would do that, that their approach would do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Biden argument is that the push for competitiveness went too far, that there's room to raise taxes on U.S. companies without pushing them to become targets of for foreign company acquisition or for pushing activity abroad. The Trump campaign argues that, you know, we've seen growth in stock prices and we've seen, you know, at least pre-pandemic economic growth, and they attribute a decent chunk of that to the tax law.
I'm speaking with Richard Rubin, tax policy writer at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Where Trump and Biden Stand on Tax Policy. How about the state and local tax deduction or any deductions like that?
Yeah, so the Biden campaign, this is a case where they actually want to cut taxes on high-income people. They want to eliminate the $10,000 cap on the state and local tax deduction. That's obviously really important for Democratic-leaning states like New York, New Jersey, and California. When you don't have that cap, it makes it easier for those states to raise taxes on their high-income citizens without sort of with having the federal government essentially bear some of that. The Trump administration has proposed to continue keeping that cap in place and has been opposed to relaxing it entirely. And they've had a good time teasing the Biden campaign and Democrats in general for trying to repeal, for trying to cut taxes for rich people.
And finish up with capital gains. Where's each candidate on that?
Yeah, there's a big change there. Again, the Trump administration, this is a case where they actually want a further tax cut. They want to take the tax rate from 20 to 15% top rate, and the Biden proposal is to go the opposite way, to take the top rate up to 39.6%. For income above $1 million. And more importantly, they've got a proposal that changes how capital gains would be taxed broadly. So right now, if you have appreciated assets at death, then that gain that you had during your lifetime before it was sold or before you died isn't treated as income tax at all or income taxable. The Biden proposal is to say death is a realization event, so that you would owe income taxes on, with some level of exemption, you would owe income taxes, capital gains taxes, on those appreciated assets at death.
Thanks, Richard Rubin, tax policy writer at the Wall Street Journal. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Thursday. technically Friday Eve. Official. I mean, that's not even unofficially. It is officially Friday Eve.
I mean, it's on Twitter.
That's
so
how. That's right.
It's on Twitter. I guess at this point, it's official, right? Yeah. Is that how it works?
It's excellent point, Mike. It's time now for the mic drop. Here's this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know that everyone has a favorite fast food place, and that apparently goes for criminals, too. A burglary suspect was recently targeted for arrest after authorities connected him with a string of break-ins at several Taco Bell restaurants in Pennsylvania. Then after issuing a warrant for the suspect's arrest, they reportedly discovered that he was already in custody in Indiana, also for allegedly breaking into Taco Bell's. Authorities then discovered that the suspect had been linked to 30 cases across Kentucky, West Virginia, and Ohio, all reportedly for similar burglaries at Taco Bell. The man is now facing multiple felony charges in three different cities and townships across Pennsylvania for the most recent string of Taco Bell robberies. He's accused of stealing $900 combined from three different locations, also accused of causing over $7,000 in damages to the restaurants.
Man,
yeah,
what is with this?
Well, you know, I'm no criminal mastermind, but it seems like, you know, maybe he feels like, you know, once he gets one right, once he gets one Taco Bell, he figures, okay, I know the lay of the land. You know, they're all sort of similarly structured, right? So there's going to be no surprises once he gets inside. He knows exactly where to go to get the cash and all that kind of stuff.
Wow, that's just quite a commitment, I think, to Taco Bell.
I mean, they didn't say he was taking the food, so, you know, not necessarily going there for the tacos or burritos or whatever, but maybe he just sort of, like, you know, has a good feeling about how to get the job done.
I'm not a Taco Bell guy.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
So it made me wonder, like, what are the most popular Taco Bell items? Like, I just don't have a good feel. I'm looking at this one list online, like a Dorito Locos Tacos.
My kids like those.
The cheesy gordita crunch.
I'll take one of those.
Nacho fries box.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, those are top three for you also.
Bring them all by. My kids and I were frequenting Taco Bell a lot for a while, so I sampled all of what the menu had to offer.
I guess just based on highways I travel or have traveled the last few years, it's McDonald's just seems to be the one that's out there.
You need
for
some
us.
Different highways. Yeah. I'm just going to say that. And you'd think that we'd go the rest of 2020 without another sighting of the jetpack guy, did you? Well, you'll remember in late August, all of the internet was buzzing after two pilots reported seeing a guy in a jetpack flying high in the air near Los Angeles International Airport. Flash forward to yesterday, another pilot reported seeing a jetpack-clad person near LAX. The FAA says a China Airlines crew reported seeing the person at an altitude of about 6,000 feet, 7 miles northwest of the airport at about 1:45 p.m. The identity of the rogue flyer or flyers, if it even really was a person, still remains a mystery. The FAA said it had alerted local law enforcement who were looking into the report.
How could he not be tracked?
Yeah, well,
if he's at that altitude, and doesn't he show up on some sort of radar or video camera?
And some people are saying, you know, these jetpacks, they make a lot of noise.
Yeah.
Like, you would think they take off from the ground. Somebody would hear it, spot it. Obviously, everyone's got their cell phone cameras, but this doesn't seem to be the case.
He lands and, like, just hops into some gray Honda Accord and disappears into the populace.
I suppose so.
It's weird.
Only to return a couple of months later.
Yes. Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, see how we can help at planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals. Glad you're with us. Planning for retirement is stressful enough, right? Try bringing a pandemic into the mix. Despite the uncertainty spawned by the health crisis, a new survey by Charles Schwab finds baby boomers are confident they will have a successful retirement and their lifestyle will be everything as planned. It found 82% of boomers believe their savings will get them all the way or most of the way to living out their dreams in retirement. USA Today took a look at the study. It found the age group, age 55 to 75, also believe their lifestyle will compare better than the generations before and after them. Over 84% of boomers anticipate their quality of life in retirement will be better than that of their parents. More than 80% of boomers also believe their retirement will be better than their children's. Other findings, more than 33% of aspiring retirees are more likely to plan to work in retirement, while only 2% of actual retirees plan to do so. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett refused to say whether she accepts the science of climate change, saying she lacks the expertise to know for sure and calling it a topic too controversial to get into. Barrett was also pressed yesterday in her confirmation hearing on voting rights by Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota.
Our absentee ballots, or better known as mail-in ballots, an essential way to vote for millions of Americans right now?
That's a matter of policy on which I can't express a view.
That just, to me, that just feels like a fundamental part of our democracy.
The committee slated to vote on Barrett next week.
Number two.
President Trump sought to shore up support from voters in the red state of Iowa, holding a rally at the Des Moines airport.
One thing I've learned, President Xi of China, he's 100%. Putin of Russia, 100%. Kim Jong-un, by the way, whatever happened to that war we were supposed to be in? Kim Jong-un of North Korea, 100%. These people are sharp and they're smart.
Joe Biden, meanwhile, held a virtual fundraiser from Wilmington, Delaware, and made taped remarks to Muslim Americans.
My administration will look like America, Muslim Americans serving at every level. On day one, I'll end Trump's unconstitutional Muslim ban. I'll push Congress to pass hate crimes legislation.
Biden did not have any public campaign events yesterday. Counties across Texas broke their own records for early voter turnout on Tuesday, the first day of in-person voting. The state's in the middle of several ongoing legal fights over early voting and mail-in ballots. In Harris County, the nation's third largest county, turnout surpassed record numbers set the first day in 2016, 5 hours before polls closed. In Georgia, early voting Monday also broke records. The Tampa Bay Rays were supposed to be showering themselves with graffiti last night, hoisting the ALCS trophy, but the Astros had other ideas. Houston staved off elimination, outlasting the Rays 4-3. The Rays still lead that series 3-1. In the NLCS, the Dodgers blasted the Braves 15-3. Atlanta still leads that series 2-1.
Dodgers got 11 runs in the first inning. Oh, man, like 80 guys come to the plate. Holy smokes. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. What started out as a final project for her 8th grade history class turned into a healing experience for everyone who lost someone. Madeline Fugate is a 13-year-old who created the COVID Memorial Quilt in an effort to represent the many lives lost to the coronavirus. Catherine Fugate, Madeline's mother, was a young activist in the 1980s who worked on the AIDS Memorial Quilt when she was 20. When she learned about her mother's experience and the millions of lives lost during the AIDS epidemic, Yahoo Life says Madeline knew she wanted to create something similar. Each memorial square is an 8-inch by 8-inch square of fabric. Madeline says she deliberately chose the number 8 because it represents the infinity sign and symbolizes that even though this person is gone, their memory and energy will live on forever. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. It's October, and what does that mean? Well, it's Geico-ween, of course. Don't be spooked by high rates on car insurance. Geico is brewing up spellbinding savings that they're crafting just for you. See how much you could save. Get a quote today at geico.com.